February 18, 2016. Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 51, Post-Conviction Actual Innocence, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, and Perkins. Noes, Senators Ross and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman. February 18, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 90, Lifetime Game and Fish Licenses, Purple Heart Recipients, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass failed in accordance with Senate Rule 5-4. Ayes, Senators Burns and Hastert. Noes, Senators Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Majority floor leader, we're at that order of business of bills on committee. Well, I was talking to the majority floor leader. Mr. Majority floor leader, was that order of business of bills on general file?
Yeah, Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself back in the committee of the whole to discuss bills on general file.
You heard the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Case.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first file for our consideration is Senate File 4. It doesn't say that. Should be Senate Joint Resolution 4. Is it? Sorry. Time out. We got the wrong stat. This is good because this sack is smaller, so we're better off. Look how far we've come already. So, that's what we've done. Senate File 86.
Senate File 86, Medical Assistance Program Design, an Act Relating to Medical Assistance, sponsored by Senator Scott, was referred... to Senate Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which reported and returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. No, Senator Hastert. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Is that the first committee?
No, that's the second committee, Mr.
Okay.
My apologies. Was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Boner, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. No, Senator Kraft. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that Senate File 86 do pass. There was no standing committee amendment. And I will explain the bill. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill, I describe it as born out of frustration. We have been fighting about what are we going to do in this area of the medical assistance, really, ever since the U.S. Supreme Court, resolved the lawsuit on the ACA, and the states that sued won the right to make their own decision as to whether to expand the Medicaid program or not. And we've had the last four sessions, three of them have now involved big fights on this issue where slightly modified versions of the original ACA Medicaid expansion have come to us and been defeated fairly resoundingly twice before. It looks like the same going to happen again this year. We tried, and Mr. Chairman, I'm always one that has believed that compromise is the art of good legislation. Our society has great diversity in the opinions of how to do things, and it's been my observation that in a democracy, nobody ever gets everything they want, and if you're going to get anything done, you've got to reach a compromise. We tried that last time in the general session, couldn't get anywhere. The issues are complicated, probably too complicated to work out in a general session. And on top of that, Mr. Chairman, we have a situation where by Constitution, by the U.S. Constitution, the term limit there, there will be a new administration in Washington on January 20th. And there may be more flexibility than there has been in dealing with the federal government. There may not, but there probably will be. So we may face a very different situation. We need to get prepared for that. So what this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is say let's have the Management Council assign, and it gives a wide variety of options for the Management Council trying to give them independence. The task of trying to work up a compromise and design and put some sideboards on what should be in that design, what should be considered developing that. And that part of the bill, it starts on page 2, item B, line 6, this program design shall follow following principles, and they're all set forth in separate subsections, subparagraphs, and it's designed to be something that would be easy for the Senate as a whole to modify, add to, subtract. And so I invite any of the senators, if there's something here that you think is missing or something that you think is wrong, bring a second or a third reading amendment to change one of these. And let me point out just a couple of ways to do it by citing examples. Look at the top of page 3, lines 2 and 3. The design shall include a work requirement for participants who are able to work. That's there with a shall on it because this legislature has been insisting on that principle in our major welfare bills, and that's what this is. Ever since the welfare reform, we've passed that motions to have that in this kind of program before. So that's okay, you've got to have one of those. If it isn't one of those, it isn't acceptable. You can, however, you don't need to go that far. Look on page 2, lines 14 through 17. The design, in conjunction with other assistance programs, shall seek to create. Okay, seek to create. You've got quite a bit of flexibility there. A pathway for participants to leave governmental assistance and become self-sufficient. And I think that's a good principle. That's something we all believe in. At least I hope we do. So that's a slightly milder way, a lot more flexibility for the design committee, whoever it is. Or then you have an even milder version. Look at page 3, lines 16 through 18. The design shall consider. Doesn't say shall do. Doesn't say shall seek to. Says shall consider. The use of a health savings account or similar accounts to provide incentives for appropriate cost and utilization reduction. So those are the three different ways. If you want to add something to it, you can do it. It will guide the committee, and this is a way for the Senate to set some sideboards on the work that the committee will do. Then there's a number of others, those. I won't insult you by reading them. You can read them. And they're all fairly straightforward. There's a provision on page 5. Design may be implemented through an expansion of Wyoming's participation in the Medicaid program with appropriate federal waivers or changes. Or as part of a an available Medicaid block grant. We hear that Washington is likely to, under some circumstances, give us that. That's a possibility. So that's something to look at. Or as a freestanding state program, if we can't get some kind of a compromise, there is a relatively small population that cannot, through their own efforts, get their poor below 100% of federal poverty. They have so many dependents that they can't earn their way onto Obamacare the way somebody that's a single individual or has just one dependent can do. Relatively small number, because many of them are eligible for existing Medicaid program, but we could design a freestanding state program, probably be funded the same way the WIP pool is funded. So that would be a small solution if we can't get a big compromise that is widely supported. So it's designed to for all those possibilities. If requirements from the Management Council designed to give them great flexibility. There's a report back before the 2017 general session, before the 2018 budget session. That may, which report is the one that really is going to be important, may well depend on what the outcome of the election shows and the degree of flexibility we think that whatever the new administration is will have. So that's flexible. But it gets us started, so we'll be ready to respond, and maybe we can finally make some progress on this thing and get something that a majority of the people we represent and a majority of the members can get behind and support. That's what this is about. Mr. Chairman, there is a Committee of the Whole amendment. Maybe we've on another issue that I haven't explained. Let's read that in. We'll talk about it.
Okay. Senate File 86, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
See, we've got Kraft and Hastert on that. So, Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 86. And I would ask for your favorable consideration. And I would like to take just a moment and explain it, and as the good chairman says, we can possibly dispense with the amendment at this time. I couldn't agree with the good chairman of the Labor Health Committee more when he said compromise is the art of good legislation. And that's the spirit in which this amendment is brought, with the idea of compromise. What the amendment does is remove the language that prohibits consideration of possible option of expanding Medicaid. And what I will tell you is that my thinking behind this amendment, it has nothing to do with whether you favor the Medicaid expansion or you do not favor the Medicaid expansion. The thought behind the amendment is that if we're going to develop a design and if we're going to empower a committee to address Wyoming health care issues, we really should look at all the issues. We really shouldn't limit the scope of the options that we're going to be considering. So this particular amendment isn't speaking in favor of or against anything. It's just seeking to ensure that all potential options be explored and that no restrictions be placed upon those individuals who are going to be tasked with addressing this very critical issue facing our state. That's the spirit of the amendment. That is the amendment. I would stand for any questions.
Thank you. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate. I couldn't agree with my good colleague from Sweetwater County more. You know, you talk about arrows in a quiver or air in your tires or tools in a toolbox. It just makes sense to have that option there. You never know what's going to happen in the future. There may be things that, you know, the federal government and Congress might actually come together and make the improvements that everybody loves, and then we'll regret having this. So I think it's, you know, there's no, I really don't think we should limit ourselves in this area.
Okay. Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be the better part of wisdom to leave this provision in and defeat the amendment. Two reasons. One, the language, and you can see it on page 5, as to how the design may be implemented. We're clearly asking, we're saying design may be implemented through an expansion of Wyoming's participation in the Medicaid program. That option is very clearly on the table with this bill. The restraint that the amendment is seeking to remove is that we won't seek approval from the federal government for an expansion until the design of the medical assistance program is submitted to and considered by the legislature. So the restraint is not one on the legislature. It is one, I suppose, on the executive branch to preserve the legislative options. I don't think, as a practical matter, they would proceed without the legislature. They would have budget difficulties for sure. They need some budget for something like that. But you never know. That had been done in some other states. We have this in a fiercer version in our existing statutes right now, but it expires on July 1st, 2016, because it was in the budget bill. So we aren't doing anything novel here. We're just trying to say, look, this is something that the legislature has to make a decision on. It's protecting our prerogatives as a legislature, and on something with the kind of big money implications that this sort of thing has, I think that's very important. So for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, on and against the amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Von Flatrum.
Mr. Chairman, I'm speaking on and for the amendment. If those that don't want to expand Medicaid, this is fine. It should approve your point. If it turns out to be the lesser cost and the lesser work for the state, then this should be, study should prove that point. It should go either way. To prohibit it even being considered is not fair play as far as what is best for our money for the state. So on and for the amendment.
Further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? Right. Question is on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, the Senate File 86. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. All those in favor of the amendments signify by standing up. They were loud and in the front row. 1, 2. All those opposed, please stand. The amendment has failed. Vote was 13 to 16. Back on the bill. Further discussion of the file. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my biggest concern is that we're doing another study, more or less, a two-year study so that we can push this down the road a little further. And I would have a great deal of hope and be enthusiastic about this process were it not for the last 4 or 5 years of doing studying and pushing it down the road. And what I did over the last couple of minutes, Mr. Chairman, was pull up the priorities for our committee number 10 for the last 5 years. In 2015, the number one priority was to study this. In 2014, the number one priority was to study this. In 2013, the number one priority was to study this. In 2012, the number one priority was to study this. And in 2011, vaguely, because we hadn't really fully understood what the problem was yet, the priority was to study this. So in the last 5 years, what we've come up with really as a product was Senate File 86, a study bill. it honestly seems like this might not be enough at this point in time after 5 years. And each time we've said we should study it more, we've always had a good reason. One other time, it was an administrative change. A presidential administrative change expected was their justification a few years back for why we should study it. At another time, it was a Supreme Court decision. Another time, it was a Supreme Court decision. There have always been reasons. There have been moving pieces that we didn't yet understand, and we felt that if we just waited a little bit longer, Mr. Chairman, we'd be able to understand this process enough to really implement it in a unique Wyoming way. But at some point, we have to do something other than study it. These people who are the folks that are below 100% of the federal poverty level, who have no options available, are not interested in waiting two more years. They need something done for them, and they need to have seen leadership by this point in time where we have a product, we have a bill, we have a solution, we have something to offer, and we have not been able to provide that yet. So, Mr. Chairman, I have a lot of concern about doing another study. I don't know that this is quite the level of commitment and effort that we need to provide after five prior years of studying.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Chairman, those efforts did, at the last general session, we presented a bill. We didn't succeed in getting cooperation. We didn't succeed in getting the kind of compromise that, frankly, we presented a bill and the executive branch just ignored it, went ahead with what they wanted to do, and they didn't have the votes. I wasn't sure anything was going to have the votes, but we did. The committee did bring forth a bill, and that's part of the frustration. We have been unable to get the kind of engagement we would need to develop a reasonable compromise. So, you know, when that happens in the legislative process, you back off and try again, and that's what we're doing.
Further discussion. Further discussion. Seeing none, the question is on Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 86. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 86 is passed Committee of the Whole. Division being called. All those in favor of Senate File 86 passing Committee of the Whole, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. You're in the front row. Yes. 19-10, Senate File 86 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next file for our consideration is Senate File 95.
Senate File 95, iCare Consumer Protection 2, an act relating to consumer protection, sponsored by Senator Barnard, was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee in the whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 95. And to explain the purpose and need for this bill, I would defer to the good sponsor from the other side of the state there, Senator Barnard.
Yay. Senator Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you Senate File 95 from the 140 optometrists in the state. As far as I know, there's unanimous support for this bill. They bring this bill to you because there is a definite reason and definite way to protect the eye care of the citizens of this state. This bill involves what they call a kiosk. What a kiosk is an auto refractor. As I told you last time in introduction, this technology is not new. It's been around a long time. And the thing about the auto refractors is they really a great instrument to get you in the ballpark on a refraction. But they have their limitations. And so if you have a patient who is moving their head, is walking back and forth, squinting their eyes, who has dry eyes, who's blinking their eyes, you're not going to get a good reading. And so these people of the state are going to pay anywhere from $45 to $75 for a refraction, which is only a small part of an eye exam, and there's a good chance that it's not going to be as accurate as it could be. I don't know any doctor, as I said before, that prescribes off of an auto refractor. That would be really dangerous, and it wouldn't be the standard of care to take a reading with an eye refractor and then write out a prescription for it. This bill makes these emerging technologies and these kiosks comply with HIPAA, ADA, FDA, and it also makes these people that are operating these kiosks provide a certain amount of liability coverage. Mr. Chairman, the bill will ensure that consumers in Wyoming using these technologies get protection as assurance as to the standard of care. And anybody who's in a medical practice knows what standard of care means. It's the minimum amount of care you give to give somebody a proper and a good result. The reason that I'm mostly talking about this bill is the fact that these auto refractors can not only give you a refraction, but they can also be used to measure the curvature of the eye. So when you fit a contact lens, you need to know the refraction, you need to know the curvature of the eye. So there's the possibility of people using a kiosk to fit contact lenses, hard and soft contact lenses. Mr. Chairman, this does not meet the standard of care. When you are going to fit a contact lens, you need to have hands-on experience. You need to touch that person's eye. You need to look down at the conjunctiva. You need to look at the cornea, examine it for scars, for health, and all these other things. You can't do that with a kiosk. So if somebody is chintzy enough and silly enough to get contact lenses from a kiosk, they're going to very well end up with a bad result. In fact, it's almost guaranteed they're going to end up with a bad result. So we are asking you to pass this bill. In the bill, we had a limitation on the powers of the lenses. We had it from a plus one to a plus 350. We've taken that out. So if you want to go to the drugstore and buy a pair of plus sixes and you think you can read with them, you have to read with them like 5 inches. But if you want them, they're there. We've taken that out. This bill doesn't expand the scope of anybody's practice, and it doesn't limit the scope of anybody's practice. There's only a little bit of a fiscal note. It's about $4,400 to be paid out of the optometric board's salaries and their budget. There is a sunset date. We try to put this in about 10 years from now. It's not working out. We can change it so that it does have a sunset date on it. Mr. Chairman, when you get the bill, there are going to be two committee amendments on it: standing committee amendment and a committee of the whole. The reason for these amendments are because we were working with the ophthalmologists, the medical board, and we met with them like the day before we were going to try to write this, and they respectively wanted to withdraw their participation, not necessarily their support, but their participation in this bill. And so many of the things that you see here are trying to take out the fact that we did this as a partnership bill. As far as I know, I feel they felt like they did not want to risk any way of perhaps getting under the auspices of the optometry board, and so they opted out of this. I think we still have good relations. We're still talking to each other, but that's the reason for some of these two two amendments that you're going to be hearing about. So, Mr. Chairman, this is a good bill. I ask your help for it, and I'll turn the time over to Senator Meyer to move and talk about the amendments.
Senator Meyer, we have a standing committee amendment. Shall we have that read in?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Standing Senate File 95, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 5.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 95 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. I think the good senator from Evanston gave a good description of what basically this amendment does. I'll briefly run through this because I know time is of an essence. The first part of it in Article 7 is definitions, most of that is the cleanup to go to optometrics and take out ophthalmologists. A little cleanup over on page 3, which basically says it's an assessment rather than a physical assessment. Over on page 4, we add in to remotely conduct or assist with any component of an eye examination. Page 5 is the same thing with the ophthalmologist. It was mentioned on page 5 here. We also had the prohibited acts. You can't prescribe without a prescription. Going on to 6 in that area there, we took out prescriptions not based solely on a kiosk and put in the areas there of examinations. The FDA, AMA, and the ADA and HIPAA have been talked about. Those are on 6 and 7. We go over on the bottom of 7, and that's where it goes in there as far as engaging in a kiosk services that has not previously had at least one person in evaluation, and we added in with a provider within 2 years of engaging in kiosk service, necessary to have some experience in there so you don't have one person who doesn't know anything teaching another person that doesn't know anything. Over on page 5, we insert a penalty provision there. The attorneys will probably love this. It provides at the end of it here, and I'm sorry for that
Go ahead, Senator Meyer.
I apologize, Mr. Chairman, to the attorneys on the floor. It has to do with violations, civil penalties, and civil penalties and costs in a jury trial. The rest of the deletions here on page 9 and 10, going on to the top of 11, is having to do the switch over between both parties being here and just optometrists, provide for rulemaking authority. So, Mr. Chairman, that does it for the standing committee amendment. I would stand for any questions and ask for a question on the amendment if there are no questions.
Thank you. Question on the amendment? Question on the amendment? All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 95, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment is carried. We're on a Committee of the Whole Amendment. Could we have that read in?
Senate File 95, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, corrected copy, page 1, line 7.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This goes into a little work that the committee did. Most of that was over on page 4 in the definition section here. We inserted ready-to-wear eyeglasses. That's a term of art. We also added in that you can buy anything over the counter where a consumer selects the device. We took out some language as far as the definitions in there, as far as what has been discussed, the focus power and the diopters. And then, Mr. Chairman, that takes care of those. We went into uniform lenses, so that makes it you just have to have the same kind of lenses on both eyes. These are all the things that you can buy over. We didn't want to step over and have some unintended consequences of things people buy at the sporting goods or drugstore every day. Then looking at on page 12, line 22. We go into a section 3 that are some repealers, which is the sunset on July 2027. We figured we'd take this thing back up and take a look at it in a general session. And other than that, Mr. Chairman, that explains the Committee of the Whole Amendment. I'd stand for questions. If not, I'd call for the question.
Questions on the Committee of the Whole Amendment. Discussion? Seeing none, the question is on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, the Senate File 95. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
Mr. Chairman, that completes the presentation. I stand for questions. If not, I think it's a good little bill, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion on the bill? Senator Scott.
Very briefly, I will advise the Senate we need another amendment in here. This is a fencing bill, and you've got to decide whether or not it's a good fence or a bad one, but we need to have an exemption for other health professions within the scope of their practice. We couldn't do it in committee because we couldn't quickly find the language because that's in a lot of other bills. I set a lobbyist to work on it, and she got me the draft language. And I simply haven't had time to go over it. So either on second or third reading, I will bring that amendment.
Okay. Further discussion on the file? Further discussion? Seeing none. The question is on Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that we do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 95. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 95 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 4.
Senate Joint Resolution 4, Labeling for Genetically Engineered Items 2, a joint resolution requesting Congress to enact legislation providing uniform food labeling related to genetic engineering, sponsored by Senator Emmerich, was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geis, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with favorable vote on Senate Joint SJ-004. Genetic engineering. And to explain this fine little vital resolution is me. This is simply a joint resolution requesting Congress to enact legislation providing for food labeling that is consistent and uniform relating to genetic engineering and however else you want to talk about it, because there's genetic engineering, there's genetically modified organisms, there's laboratory enhanced. You can think of all sorts of names. This is just the mechanical methodology of doing what Gregor Mendel discovered in the 1600s with genetics. I won't keep you long. The meat of the entire resolution starts on page 2. Line 22, whereas a patchwork of local and state mandatory labeling laws and regulations will force costly changes to manufacturing, labeling, warehousing, inventory, distribution, and all of that. Manufacturers and retailers will have to make immediate and consequential changes to their businesses to comply with new labeling requirements. Testing to determine if the products are exempt, relabeling or reformulating with specifically handled higher priced ingredients, maintaining separate production runs, state specific tracking units, segregated warehousing, trucking, and other logistical complexities will result in higher food prices. There is a provision in here that if a manufacturer wishes to label their product, they may do so. All we're asking for is a consistent, stable, countrywide labeling provision. This, you might be able to kind of equate this to weights and measures that are specified across the country. You don't have different pounds in Nebraska than you do in Wyoming. They're all the same. And I just request that you think of this, because one house of our Congress has already passed a bill achieving this. We're simply waiting for the other house to do so. I'll stand for any questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Questions for the senator? Any questions? Any questions on Senate file or Senate Joint Resolution 4? Seeing no discussion, the question is on Senator Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate Joint Resolution 4. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate Joint Resolution 4 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution 1. Senate Joint Resolution 1.
Senate Joint Resolution 1, Right to Privacy and Right to Know, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, which returned back a recommendation of due pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman, was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who returned a recommendation of do not pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee to hold rise and report it do so with a due pass motion on Senate Joint Resolution 1, Right of Privacy, Right to Know. And I refer to the good senator from the Ivory Tower.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Senator Ruffus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is Senate Joint Resolution 1, Right of Privacy and Right to Know. This came from the Digital Information Privacy Task Force through the Joint Corporations Committee. And it's the second year of work on this. There was a lot of contention last year and dispute amongst a number of interested parties. I'm happy to say that over the last year we came to some compromised language that ended up receiving the full support of everybody who has testified in front of us over that period of time. So I think we did a good job of capturing the interest. Mr. Chairman, the way this language now reads, you may recall last year it was only a right of privacy. This year there's an additional bit of context discussing the right to know, and you can see on page 2 the language of this proposed constitutional amendment includes the original language, which was the right of individual privacy is essential to the well-being of a free society and shall not be infringed without the showing of a compelling state interest. That's identical to another state's language, and we chose to adopt that. We brought that last year, but the concern was with how this would interrelate with public records acts and other compelling interests by the public that relate to transparency in government. So working with some of the advocates on that topic, we crafted some compromised language that adds a little bit of context to this right of privacy, which goes on to indicate that nothing in this section shall be construed to deprive a person of any right provided by law to examine documents or to observe the deliberations of any agency or political subdivision of the state, except in cases in which the demand of the individual privacy clearly exceeds the merits of public disclosure. The new, slightly longer language, Mr. Chairman, it has satisfied the parties that are interested in government transparency. It provides clear language that shows that, yes, we can dictate that compelling state interest in statute for public transparency while simultaneously protecting the privacy rights of folks in the state of Wyoming. That's the proposed constitutional amendment, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I'd call for the question.
Discussion on the joint resolution? Discussion?
Question.
Seeing none, the question is on Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate Joint Resolution 1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The joint resolution is passed Committee of the Whole.
Division.
Division being called. All those in favor of the joint resolution, please stand.
Yeah. Voted for it in committee.
All those opposed, please stand.
You're going to oppose the right to privacy? Really? Dude, don't do that on
the standing division was the vote of 17 to 11. Having failed the standing division, we will now have a roll call vote on Senate Joint Resolution 1.
We're against your privacy.
Anderson?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
No. Bebout?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Burns?
No.
No. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
No.
No. Cooper?
No.
No. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No,
Meyer.
Aye.
Aye. Pappas.
Aye.
Aye. Perkins.
No.
No. Peterson.
No.
No. Ross.
No.
No. Rothfuss.
Aye.
Aye. Scott.
Aye.
Aye. Bonfladen.
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger.
No.
No. President Nicholas.
Excused.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 13 ayes, 16 no.
Senate Joint Resolution 1 has failed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate Joint Senate File 6.
Senate File 6, First Judicial District, Number of District Judges, an Act Relating to the Judiciary, sponsored by Senator Ross, was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, Kinski, and Von Flatern. Senator Christensen, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, when the body rises, I recommend that when the body does rise, they do with a do pass. Favorable consideration on Senate File 6. First Judicial District, Number of District Judges.
Point of order by Rothfuss.
Thank you. Yeah, just one more shot at that with move in the phrase.
Mr. Chairman.
How about the Committee of the Whole?
I move that when Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable consideration on Senate File 6.
Thank you. I do feel like we're dead bodies about to rise when this place gets over, but that got us through it. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bring to you Senate File 6, which is a First Judicial District and the number of judges. Members of the Senate, this matter was referred to the judiciary during the interim from Management Council, but basically there was no... They were not given really any real direction with regards to what to ultimately do. That testimony was presented, I think, in September. The Supreme Court and, of course, the District Court Judges Judicial Conference are all in favor of this bill. The courts have a case management weighted study that shows that in the First Judicial District, a need for actually more than four, they have three current judges, a need for 4.5 judges, but they're faced with a predicament, and the predicament is that the current county courthouse, which also houses all your other county officials, does not have sufficient courtroom space. And so in order to push this matter down the road, some impetus with regards to the county commissioners who I met with, and they are currently reviewing alternatives for what they could do, but to also let them know that we're serious, is this bill. This bill basically authorizes an additional judge. But the position is not filled, nor is there any appropriation for it. It simply authorizes the position, and then it gives some mandates that have to be completed, all of which have to be completed, for this judgeship to be filled. First, there has to be a certification by the Chief Justice that the county has completed and are ready for occupancy for an additional judge, district court judge. So they have to build a courthouse, basically, or a new court. They have to show adequate facilities, including facilities to accommodate a 12-person jury. You got your offices and other auxiliary facilities. And this has to be in addition to what currently exists as of July 1 of 2016. The certification then has to be delivered either to the Joint Appropriations Committee or the Joint Judiciary Committee. Either one of them may sponsor legislation if it deems it appropriate. And the last thing that has to happen is there has to be a new enactment of legislation filling the additional district court judgeship. So that is the bill. It's kind of premised after what we did a few years ago. If you were around in Casper, it had difficulty getting a courthouse. It wasn't for lack of trying. The matter was submitted on the ballot a number of different times, and it was defeated several different times. Finally, we said, okay, we'll give you a judgeship if you do the right thing and build the courthouse, and they did do that. And that's where we're at here in Cheyenne, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the file. Senator Bebout?
I did.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions. It seems to me that if we're going to have another judge, that we ought to have in the bill the rationale behind it when we look at the overall picture of the state. And, so you talk about caseload, and I won't debate or argue with my colleague from Laramie County that they may need 4.5 judges, but they may have other places where they have more than they need. And so I'm curious why, if we're going to do this, the only thing we ask to have them certify is that they're going to have another courtroom. I would think we would want some information that, yeah, we really have the need when we look at not only assessing here relative to the rest of the state. And to me, that would be more important when I make my decision to see that maybe we don't have the need somewhere else and we can do that. And I can remember other times where we did this and I can't remember the loads, but we were over-exaggerated, and then, of course, things come and go, ebb and flow, and we didn't need all the judges we had. It used to be the judges would travel when they would have that overflowing. Maybe you can't do that down here. We used to do that up in the northwestern part of the state. The other question I have, and, once you start this, it's awfully hard to turn it down. So they go and build the courtroom, and then they come to us, and it's really difficult to say, how much will it cost us, roughly, to do this if we, in fact, move forward?
Thank you, Senator Bebout. Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In our Judiciary Committee meetings this summer, Joint Judiciary, one of the topics we took on mid-cycle was to invite the judges to come talk about their needs, and that was at the approval of Management Council. And what we found, what was presented to us in their caseload study, was that this district, the southeast corner of the state, did have the highest numbers and the highest need and the largest shortage. There are other districts around the state that are also in need, but nobody had the numbers that these folks had on their percentages. And in addition to that, there was a vote by the district judges who recognized that need and supported this conversation to continue. We also certainly appreciate the cost that goes on, and it's not just hiring one judge, it's the staff and everyone that goes along with it. In the changing populations in the state, I think, as you just heard, this is an area of growth, and so the possibilities of a reduced demand are probably not likely. There's a lot of hurdles before they actually can put this together, and again, the ball is really in the local county court, but this does set the stage and help create the conversation at the local level.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, according to the current budget, it's going to cost about $500,000 per year per judge, give or take $50,000 or something like that. I tend to lean toward this bill, to voting for it. I recall the rest of that story of that judge we authorized up in Casper. They couldn't get the courtroom built. And if I recall, that judge ended up, or a judge got awarded to another city in the Northeast that's going to be getting a new road. And the
show me the money.
Yeah, I'll echo what the chairman of Judiciary said. This area, this part of the state is growing. It has nothing to do with minerals. It has to do, frankly, with the expansion of the Front Range. I think the movement of businesses from the Front Range up here because of our quality of life and our tax advantages.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Senator Von Flatrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Coming from the place that's getting the new road to the judge's house, this area down here is missing 1.41 judges, so almost one and a half judges. And then the nearest where, and I agree with my fellow senator from Fremont, that to share judges would be a great idea, but if you go to Albany and Carbon County, which would be the next closest traveling distances, we always know I-80 is always shut down. They're at 91% of use, so they're only 9% short of being 100% of use. And if you went to the North Sheridan Johnson, they're at about 92%. There's nowhere in the state that we have anybody that has a judge at even 20 or 25% that could share it with this area down here. And the closest one to us is only 9% short of being 100% full with the judges they have.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion. Further discussion. Not seeing any. The question is on Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 6. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 6 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 82.
I'm not spending any money. Yes.
Senate File 82, Palliative Care, an act relating to public health and safety, sponsored by Senator Scott, was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Kraft, Driscoll, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 82 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File 82, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Standing Committee Amendment. Let me first explain the bill very briefly before we go to the Standing Committee Amendment. Basically, this was it's a model bill that some of the people really concerned about cancer brought to me. We worked it over, made sure it wasn't going to cost us any money we don't have. That being kind of year it is, you can see what it does. It's trying to improve the situation for this kind of care, which includes hospice care, but is broader than that. And I think will be a big help for anybody who's has a terminal illness or has a relative with a terminal illness, trying to iron out some of the problems here. I won't go into great detail because I don't think it's controversial. I point out I did a couple of things to it that are different from the standard. One of the problems in this area is that some of the drugs that are used are also the ones prescription drugs most likely to be abused on the street. And I asked somebody to be appointed to this council that the governor's going to put together that has some experience from the law enforcement side, and I asked the group to seek to open a dialogue between the people that are doing palliative care and have an interest in it and the people that are doing the law enforcement, because I think if the two sides will talk to each other, they can come up with some better solutions for that interface that answers both needs. So that's a little different. And then the other one is relating to the Standing Committee Amendment. So let me explain the Standing Committee Amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
there's a sunset and an evaluation in here, and we're doing something novel in the evaluation. We're saying instead of having a bureaucracy involved, give us an evaluation of what a wonderful job it is. We'll ask some of the advocates and the people who might think it was unnecessary government to give us a report and an evaluation, so we're requesting that. And we got a name wrong, so we changed American Cancer Society, American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. That's just a technical change. And then down here where we're talking about other concerned parties, it was frankly a computer study, stutter. And I think anybody that knows about my skills with a computer can understand how that would happen. And we're trying to delete three superfluous words that got carried over by accident. And it's surprising how many times you look at something before you find something like that. But if the words are removed, the language will read, other concerned parties may either collaborate with the American Cancer Society and Cancer Action Network for the preparation of a report or provide their own reports, so the interim committee will hear from a broad spectrum of reports as to is it worthwhile, should we do something different, et cetera, before the sunset date, Mr. Chairman. So that's Standing Committee Amendment. I'd be happy to answer any questions on it.
Discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Seeing none, the question is on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to Senate File 8. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment is adopted. Back to you, Senator Scott.
Chairman, I know I explained it very rapidly. I'd be happy to answer any questions either now or later on the substance of the bill.
Any questions on the bill? Any discussion? Seeing none, the question is on Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 82. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 82 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 63.
Senate File 63, Economic Development Programs Revisions, an act relating to economic development, sponsored by the Management Audit Committee, was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, who returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, excused Senator Anderson, Senator Cooper, acting chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 63. There is an amendment. I ask that it be read in at this time.
Senate File 63, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 8.
Senator Von Flatern.
I move Amendment 1 to Senate File 63, and for the explanation of the amendment and the bill, I yield the floor to Senator Burns.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Management Audit took a look at the industrial development bonds and found them to be wanting. They're statutorily required to utilize the prudent investor rule when making investments. They found that they're not commensurate with the investment risk, and they also found that they don't contribute the market returns that they should. So there was a meeting of dual purposes in 2014. The well-coiffed senator from Cody came up with large fund economic development loans for a situation he had up there, which actually serve the same purpose as industrial development bonds, and uses the old Amendment 4 revolving investment fund. So what this bill does in result from the management audit study is relieves that. What it does is it moves up sunset date of the industrial development bonds from July 1st, 2017, to July 1st, 2016, because we have no more need for them. And it also removes the Wyoming Business Council from formally recommending the interest rate, because that was the portion that was in violation of the prudent investor rule. And then the other thing it does is with the Economic Development Loan Program, it changes, it flips the ratio of what the investor has to provide versus what the state will provide. It was 1-3. We found no takers on that, including the outfit up in Cody. So it goes to 3-1 instead. And it also revives the language to require applicants to pay the consultant cost. And it extends the $25 million appropriation through 2019. And that's what is in the revolving fund right now. And, Mr. Chairman, to take you through the bill, if we go page 1, it has the formal title of what it's going to do. If you move over to page 3, you see the on line 5, we get rid of the recommended interest rate by the Wyoming Business Council. It's just coming into conforming with the prudent investor law. We also move up the repeal date of industrial development bonds. That's on line 7 and 8. Then you move to the bottom, line 23. That's just a conforming amendment that actually conforms to what was Senate File 97 from 2014, which became Wyoming Session Laws, Chapter 46. That's the conforming part of it. Then you go to Section 2, and that's where we reverse the ratio from 1-3 to 3-1. And then you go on to page 6, the bottom of page 6, Mr. Chairman, and that's where it states, bottom page 6, top of page 7, that's where it states that any expert employed in this subsection shall be paid by the applicant, so the state doesn't have to pay it. Sections 3 and 4 goes back to the execution of the repeal of industrial development bonds, and there are currently two IDBs that are out there. They will not be affected by the curtailing. It's what we're doing is we're repealing the issuing of them. This will not affect them at all. And then Section 5 is the repealer. And then I'll go to the Standing Committee Amendment, Mr. Chairman. And what the Standing Committee Amendment basically does is it bifurcates the effective dates of the two parts of the bill. So one is effective immediately, and the other is effective on July 1st, 2016. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to take any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Questions on the amendment? Discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, the question is on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 63. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment has carried. Back on the bill, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to take any questions on the bill.
We have Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Just a couple questions. Appreciate the work on this. Just a couple things from actually experiencing the other program and wondered if you guys had talked about if the Management Audit Committee considered this. A couple things. One is when you on page 5 and or lines 5 through 11 in there, you're striking out some of the restrictive language that was there before. I can tell you that one of the reasons that that language is there before, that it did not allow for a refinance as opposed to a new project. And so by striking that language, you're just defining the word, unless we've got the word project defined tighter than that, I think that ultimately you could be in a situation where you're refinancing. The other question I would have then is also one of the other issues is when you look at the language there that the project of at least 25% of the total cost of the project is provided from funding sources not provided by the state of Wyoming. Does that anticipate in kind? So does it have to be a cash contribution, or can you contribute other in kind property? And if so, obviously, there are going to have to be some rules promulgated about what would satisfy in kind, but those are two issues that I can guarantee will arise as you move forward.
Further discussion? Further questions? Back to you, Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the language on page 5, 4 through lines 4 through 11 is the same as the language down at the bottom of the page going on to page 6, and that was discussed actually at great length in committee. in Minerals Committee, and there were a number of word substitutions being made going back and forth, and the decision by the Treasurer's Office and by the committee and by the Wyoming Business Council was to keep the language the way it was, because every time we came up with substitute language, somebody came up with an example of why that particular language wouldn't work. And so what we did, what we ended up, the reason, one of the reasons we ended up comfortable with the language as it is because these large development loans are subject to the discretion of the state treasurer. The state treasurer can sit there and say no at any given time if the 25% coming in is shaky in any way. Most extensive aspect of the speaking of the talk about it was about a private entity and whether it's an owner or not. Well, the question arose whether it was what if it's DOE? What if it's the state of Colorado? Somebody like that. What if it's a guarantee by somebody who you know has the wherewithal to do it? So we left the language relatively loosely, but also, again, at the discretion of the treasurer. And if there are any questions about the judgment of the treasurer, at some future treasurer, then I would suggest that this language be tightened up.
Further discussion? Looking for further discussion? Not seeing any. The question is on Senator Von Fleitern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do-pass recommendation for Senate File 63. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 63 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next file for our consideration is Senate File 99.
Senate File 99, Emergency Medical Services, an Act Relating to Special Districts, sponsored by Senator Dockstader. Was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 99. I think there was a standing committee amendment. I'd ask the reading clerk read that in at this time.
Senate File 99, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
For explanation of the bill and the amendment, I would defer to the good senator from Star Valley, the Mark Cuban, Wyoming's Mark Cuban of the media world.
Senator Dockstader.
Okay, members of the Senate, I bring you Senate File 99, Emergency Medical Services. Potential for our local budget cuts. I felt like we needed to have this back on the table for discussion and consideration. We have special districts for water and sewer, swimming pools, golf courses, all of that, but nothing for vital emergency medical services. Something just as important as that, I didn't understand why we couldn't find something that would work to help out our EMS. So with 99, we have a provision for emergency medical services. Page 2, lines 7 and 8, lines 18 and 19, that's where the provision is. Directions for the agreements with the public and private agencies, institutions, people, and so forth come on page 3. This includes any collection for medical services and the authority to charge the rates and then direct the revenues to the district. Operation and function of a special district is already established in Title 18, Chapter 12. Then we find that the petitioners for the district file the request with the county commission. Boundaries must be outside of incorporated municipalities, but the district has the option of working with a local government municipality through a joint powers board. The district board may consist of 3 to 5 members. Now, continuing with established statutes, assessment is based on the benefits of the program. The district will need to have a resolution of intent or use of the revenues. This time, I'd like to, Mr. Chairman, if we could move the amendment, and then I'll explain that.
Okay. So. Go ahead and move the amendment. I can't remember if Senator Meyer did or not.
All right. Yeah, you had
he did move the amendment. So on the amendment, Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I moved the amendment. He had it read in. So working with the committee on this, they saw the need that we needed to better define the conduit, the flow of money, how we get it done. I do appreciate their help with that.
So, Mr. Chairman, the amendment taken from Title 25B, we establish the authority for the county to levy the mill. It lays the groundwork, provides for the two mills at the discretion and direction of the county, and the additional two at the approval of the voters. If C and C, we establish the process for the election. If needed, for the additional two mills, there is a stipulation for the 60 days and the notation not to exceed 1 year with the amount of four mills on each dollar and the requirement of the majority vote. In D, this is in the amendment, the notation to have the proposal reviewed in a general election every 4 years is there. And E covers the uniform municipal fiscal procedure. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for your approval on the amendment, and I'll go back to the bill.
Questions on the amendment? Questions on the amendment? Not seeing any. The motion is on Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 99. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Back on the bill, Senator. That's passed. Back on the bill, Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me emphasize, folks, this is completely optional. It's left to those in the proposed area to request the district have the public hearings necessary. Let me say, too, I want you to step outside the world of cities and malls and universities and colleges and go out to rural areas. I track myself over here every morning on Lincoln Way, and I'm thinking halfway I've probably crossed through all 12 of my communities many times, many stoplights. We don't even have a stoplight. Well, we've got one at the dump when you're getting your trash out there. And they want to weigh you. That's it. Think small. Think rural communities. We're trying to find something for our EMS services that'll work. Our county says, well, they need a little skin in the game. So what do? They go out to their neighbors and say, we want your help. That's up to them. It's the option. We want your help. We want to put a district together. We'll tie a joint powers board in with one of our towns, our little towns. We'll bring the counties on board. My county commissioners are saying this gives them more options. This one's for the little guys, folks. This isn't for the big guys. You got your big garages here and your full operations, your fully paid staff. This is for the little guys. The volunteer groups across the country or across the state, it's hard to find volunteers anymore for this. It just is. We're struggling with that. They don't want to give up their weekends and their Saturdays. We got one little group trying to play around with trying to pay them, and I don't know how they're going to do that. And these are the guys who jump out of their shops and grab the ambulance and run, but those are running out. The shop owners, we even had our mortician do it for a while, but that caused a little confusion at the accident scenes. Yeah, he had to declare conflict, and he actually hung up his EMT jacket. So at any rate, I'm looking for some help with our little guys. This is optional. They don't have to do it, but if they find themselves in a jam, and if we're down the road, and all we're doing is funding the county courthouse and the road and bridge department, then we got to go out and find something for our EMS services. This gives them a chance to team up and work together. I'd ask for your support.
Discussion on the bill? Discussion on the bill? Not seeing any. The question is on Senator Meyer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with the do-pass recommendation on Senate File 99. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. We've got a red light at our dump, too. That's kind of neat. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 94.
Senate File 94, Payment for Educational Services, an act relating to payments for educational services, sponsored by Senator Meyer. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Dockstetter, Landon, Pappas, and Rothfuss, Senator Coe, Chairman. Re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Chairman, moving the committee, the whole rights report, do so with due pass recommendation on Senate File 94. There is a standing committee amendment. I ask that that be read in at this time.
Senate File 94, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the amendment and defer to Senator Meyer for an explanation of the bill and the amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, good senator from Cody. Mr. Chairman, I did pass out some talking points here. This bill has had a lot of work on it by a lot of folks, and I kind of want to recognize their effort. We asked the governor to help us on this one here, and we've had a lot of participation by the Department of Ed, Family Services, Department of Health. I want to especially thank the good senator from Education and their committee by allowing me the time to get all these folks together and bring forth a tight little bill with a good amendment. When I say it's tight, Mr. Chairman, what this bill did is restrict these educational payments to psychiatric residential centers. Let me talk a little bit about the need for this. Essentially, a few years ago, I think this body and a lot of people were trying to shift our juvenile at-risk kids away from the criminal justice avenue and into a non-criminal justice setting. And so the Department of Family Service took up that charge, and they've deferred a lot of kids out of the criminal part of it and into a DFS part of it. And they wanted to make sure that the families remain together. When they go into the criminal part of it, a lot of times the families are taken away from the kids, or DFS might have custody of the children. What they've done is been able to move these folks, these kids, into a residential treatment setting, get the treatment that they need, and in that case, the families come back together a lot quicker, and the treatment time is usually a lot less than if you go through the court system. So that works really good, but there's one little glitch, Mr. Chairman, and that little glitch is that the education dollars don't follow with the child when they come out of the school district. And so what this bill does is fix that glitch so they follow into the residential treatment center for the time that they're in those different centers. So, Mr. Chairman, that kind of explains the need for the bill and what the bill does. I'll briefly go through it real quick. We're all between us and something else. So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer, your paper's dragging on your microphone.
Okay, I apologize, Mr. Chairman. So this does go to the residential psychiatric residential treatment centers. That's a small bed space compared to where we started with this, and it's really where we need to go with it. There's by rule and regulation, Mr. Chairman, that the Department of Health and Department of Education has the ability to determine how much gets paid. And that's through the Navigant study that we all have, that they're only paid by that. That comes through every 3 years as far as the amount of money that can be paid for either health when it's concerned with the health care or education if it's concerned with the factor on education. These are only Medicaid-eligible students. There's a medical necessity that has to be derived in this when they go through the Medicaid system. So it doesn't cost us any more to determine who these folks are because they're in the Medicaid system already. And essentially, Mr. Chairman, that's pretty much what we've got. Is we've got the education is going to be done by an individual learning plan. So we know that the right kind of education is going to happen. Department of Education oversees that. If they don't do it right, they don't get paid. Mr. Chairman, the other part here, I guess we're pretty much over to the appropriation on this, Mr. Chairman. So I guess I would defer to the Chairman of the Appropriations to tell us about our appropriation, or if
well, Senator Meyer, did you want to deal with the Standing Committee Amendment first?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I can. I guess I would move the Standing Committee Amendment if I have it. Evan, no, I think the good chairman from Education moved the Standing Committee
Amendment. He did.
So if there's any questions on that, I'd answer questions. And if not, Mr. Chairman, I'd call for the question.
Any discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we heard the bill, I think, on Monday, and we had these four different government entities, mainly Department of Family Services, Department of Health, Department of Education and the governor's office, and nobody could get together. So I laid the bill back because I think this bill is significant. I mean, this bill is a lifeline bill, to be honest with you. And I said, you all get together and you come back Wednesday morning and you bring an amendment. And we even had a staffer work with them. You bring an amendment. It gets you all on the same page. And that's what they did. And that's what you see in the Standing Committee Amendment. But this is a very important piece of legislation. It has the potential to affect a lot of kids out there. So I'd urge that you support the Standing Committee Amendment.
Further discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Further discussion. Seeing none, the question is on the Standing Committee Amendment to Senate File 94. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Back on the file. Anything from appropriations? Anything? Nothing. No. Any further discussion on the file?
Well,
good time to sit down. But anyway, go ahead, Senator Meyer.
Well, I do have to. Well, if appropriations isn't going to talk to the appropriations, I better tell people about it in case. So, but basically, there's no new money in the appropriations. We use money for the COPS program, which is court order placements. It's essentially the same population of kids that were in court order that were deferred, and so it's $2 million, Mr. Chairman. And like I say, there's no new money in. That's appropriations on.
Further discussion on the file or the appropriations? Further discussion at all? Perceiving none, the question is on Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 94. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 94 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 72.
Senate File 72, 70 miles per hour speed limit state highways, an act relating to highways, sponsored by Senator Christensen. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Cooper, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern, excused Senator Anderson, Senator Cooper, acting chairman. Re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, who'd returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger, Senator Ross, chairman.
You heard the reading of the file, and I saw that the good Senator, Chairman of the Minerals, tossed the ball to you, Senator Christensen. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 72. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 72 is an act relating to highways, increasing the maximum speed limit on state highways from 65 to 70. It amends the penalties to take into account, so there's are consistent with how they are today. For this next five over, it amends the assessment of court costs and provides for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, that really is the meat of it. I will stop describing the bill and explain why this is an important bill. 2 years ago, the last bill that I remember watching to be signed in the governor's office, it had our now Chairman of Appropriations and our President and the former Speaker of the House. It was kind of a neat bill, and it had to do with raising the speed limit from 65 to 70. Things weren't moving along, so last year there was another bill to help bump that along. And here we are this year with three roads that have recently been raised, I believe. And those roads are 18 miles between Cody and Montana state line, 19 miles between Saratoga and I-80, and 177 miles between Cheyenne and Newcastle. One of the reasons this is important to know is, now let me take it back, there are 6,400 miles of state highway. These aren't county roads, these aren't the dirt roads either. There's a two-lane state highway in Wyoming. The highway department, and this isn't a criticism of what they have done. This is probably more self-criticism on this body and the instructions we gave them. But we told them to take a look at this and see what they can do. They did an initial screening survey of the 6,400 miles, and they decided that 3,381 were already either below 65 or mountainous terrain or in urban areas. So that left right at 3,000 miles to worry about. Those first miles, that first section, they did the screening process. They removed the 3,000, 3,300, 3,400 miles. And then they studied those first three sections, 214 miles, and it cost $152,579 that we have already spent to out-of-state contractors. We have, and that, while that includes the screening process appeared to be pretty easy to look at where are the lower speed limits primarily. So that screening process and those 177 miles, it was roughly $713 per mile of screening and study we've already spent. We still have a lot more miles to screen, to look at. And right now, their own schedule that was provided by the state engineer, we're looking at another, if we can keep it to a much lower cost of only $187 per mile, another $520,000 in studying. This bill says the maximum speed limit goes from 60 to 65 to 70. Let's maybe save some money on some of that studying. Most of us drive Wyoming highways and have a sense of our highways compared to our neighbors who have 70-mile-an-hour roads. This doesn't force the issue. If YDOT feels there's a hazardous stretch in that remaining 3,000 miles, they can certainly look at lowering that speed limit and keeping it down to 65. But those are already 65-mile-an-hour areas. I think if we'd known the money and the time involved 2 years ago and then last year, we probably would have gone 65 to 70 and stopped the time and all the money that's been spent. It's true there's still money to be spent on making signs. One of the interesting notes in last year's bill, appropriations stripped the fiscal note. They still spent that money. This year we had a fiscal note, appropriations stripped the fiscal note. There's still a commitment to we'll do whatever we need to do. Not sure where all the money's coming to keep spending, but this bill may change some of that money that is planned on being spent in the future and deal with our speed limit issues that people have anticipated were going to be raised 2 years ago. That's the bill. Some of the explanation I'll stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill? Discussion on the bill. Looking for discussion, not seeing any. The question is on Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 72. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Boom, boom, Senate File 72 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next file for our consideration is Senate File 51.
Senate File 51. Post-Conviction Actual Innocence, an Act Relating to Criminal Procedure, sponsored by Senator Escobel. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senator Christensen, Escobel, and Kinski. No, Senators Hicks and Von Flatern, Senator Christensen, Chairman. Re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, and Perkins. Noes, Senators Ross and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Christensen?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 51. And I would also note that there is a standing committee amendment, if we could have that written.
Senate File 51, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Christensen.
I'll move that amendment and turn the amendment and the bill over to Senator Escobel to be explained.
Senator Escobel, seems like you've been here before.
I think I have, Mr. Chairman. And, Mr. Chairman, it's certainly, I bring Senate File 51, ask for a favorable recommendation, and Mr. Chairman, members of the body, certainly not my intention to in any way add to your time here in these chambers. I know you all want to go home, and I wish I could go home also. But and I probably wouldn't be here with this bill if things had gone a little bit different 2 years ago.
Yeah, I missed Tuesday.
But it's not the way it worked, so here I am.
And this bill, as I look at it, it's intended to answer the question, how does one make amends to someone whom one has caused great injury? And we've been talking about that in different bills. We spent some time talking about sexual assault by a person in authority. My good friend from Campbell County said that should never happen to anyone. When the state, an entity in authority, injures one of its subjects, how does one make amends to its citizen, to its subject? You know, that's the question. How do you make amends? And this bill is intended to answer that question to some extent. I'll go over it briefly and do likewise with the amendments. First of all, Mr. Chairman, this is a summary of Senate File 51, and it's based on a bill that was sponsored by the Joint Judiciary Committee during the 2014 budget session, which was developed in consultation with the innocence community and prosecuting and defense attorneys. The bill passed both chambers, but with different versions, it could not be resolved in time for the conference committee. If those differences had been resolved, I wouldn't be here before you. The bill has two components. The first would allow a motion for a new trial based on newly discovered evidence of actual innocence. This would fill the gap in Wyoming law, which already permits a new trial based on DNA evidence, but provides no recourse for non-DNA cases, which comprise approximately 85% to 90% of criminal cases. Without the bill, valid innocent claims may be barred by the 2-year deadline to file a motion for a new trial or the 5-year post-conviction statute. The standard for obtaining a new trial remains high. The second component allows a person who has been declared factually innocent to obtain compensation from the state. Such compensation would be available regardless of whether the exoneration was based on DNA or non-DNA evidence. Such compensation serves to correct an injustice and help someone who has been wronged successfully reintegrate themselves as a productive member of society, while decreasing the risk of federal civil rights suits. Compensation, the original bill, is based on the amount of time wrongfully served and does not exceed $500,000. These amounts are roughly average for nearby states and are far below the amounts permitted by Texas and the federal government. So this bill is basically composed of those two components. In regard to the amendment, which was offered by a member of the innocence community, it basically go over that that amendment as I understand it. And these are some of the changes that would be helpful in correcting the effects of wrongful convictions. Some changes would make it hopefully more effective. For example, on page 3, line 18, there might be hybrid cases involving DNA and non-DNA evidence. Removing the reference to other than DNA evidence will ensure that they can be brought as a single case under a new statute. That's part of the amendment. On page 3, line 19, the standard of reasonable probability is probably a better standard than clear and convincing evidence. Most states, I understand, use this standard, which is appropriate since it is a motion for a new trial, not an order of actual innocence. Page 4, line 4, removes an unnecessary and difficult requirement that a movement show that there is no other state corrective process. For example, must a movement prove that they do not have an ineffective assistance of counsel claim? Page 4, line 8, it removes a restriction on use of recantation. Most DNA, non-DNA cases rely in part on such recantations. particularly by informants and rogue perpetrators. Page 4, line 23, it would be helpful to add language, perhaps model on Texas legislation clarifying that newly discovered evidence includes scientific evidence that was used to convict someone but has now been undermined by more accurate research. Goes on in terms of those amendments, Mr. Chairman, on page 5, line 12, as a matter of due process, the movement should have an opportunity to respond in the state's opposition to a motion for a new trial. Page 9, line 2, the movement should have an opportunity to appeal a denial of a motion for a new trial, and subsequent motions should be permitted. This is particularly important when new evidence comes to light after initial motion has been denied. Page 9, line 12, compensation be equally available for exoneration based on DNA or non-DNA evidence. I'm just about finished, Mr.
How about if we keep the voices down the back?
Page 10, line 9, we believe a two-year limitation period is fair, but that a compensation opportunity should be available for individuals exonerated before the bill's effective date. Page 10, line 12, the court may be in a better position to determine an exoneree's eligibility for compensation rather than the Attorney General, which is the way the bill came out originally. The bill talks for an average initial payment, brought that up a little bit, so it would be about 20% of the amount awarded, according to the amendment. And on pages 11 and 12, we deleted the part about waiver, because requiring exonerees to waive their right to maintain civil rights claims may raise constitutional issues, which could embroil the state in additional costly litigation. And finally, we took out the appropriation in the original bill, or the amendment took out the appropriation, because making payments contingent on appropriation would probably make it difficult for anyone to ever receive relief. So we took that out, that the payments were contingent on an appropriation. Now, some states have an insurance pool, and there may be other avenues. This bill was basically a way to set the stage to provide the building blocks, such as we did when we added a judge to this district. We don't have the space for the judge, but it's a way of setting the stage. And this bill tries to set the stage for making amends to those individuals that the state has harmed. With that, Mr. Chairman, as per body's approval of the amendments.
Okay. The discussion is on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Discussion on the amendment, Senator Meyer.
I apologize to the body if this is the wrong amendment, but this is one that takes it from clear and convincing down to a reasonable probability.
Right. That is true, Senator Meyer. That's on the first page of the amendment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've got a problem with that standard from the standpoint that I think that, most of these guys that are in there for a long time, I guess, I think, and it's a jury trial, or even the judge, I think it's got to be beyond reasonable doubt. So I don't know how you cross back to reasonable probability. The standard of clear and convincing, to me, seems like a fair standard in those situations. So the reasonable probability seems like a standard so low that you're going to end up with 100 new trials every year. I'd caution the body of moving to that standard. I like the concept. I think we have to do it, but I think that's a standard that I just can't live with.
Anybody else have any questions for the sponsor? Anybody else? Back to you, Senator Esco. Well, I'm sorry, Senator Ross. On the amendment?
On the amendment.
Senator, I better turn off Senator Meyer's microphone, or we're all going to be copped out of here. Go ahead, Senator Ross.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, on and against this amendment, folks, the bill as it came to you was the bill of purportedly, I don't have the original bill, so I can't
that was purportedly the bill that failed a few years ago. When the bill was re-referred to appropriations, you know, we delved into a little bit of this to see what was going on. And quite frankly, if you pass this amendment, you emasculate the bill. And you got to remember that I've had some experience with this because I was chairman of Judiciary when we passed the DNA exoneration bill. And this is a good – the testimony in our committee was that the only person or people that showed up for the bill in Judiciary was a person from an entity that represents a regional organization that advocated for the changes in the standing committee amendment. So I'd be very, very careful about what you do here.
Further discussion, Senator Hicks.
Then we'll- Chairman, I was a no on this bill in committee, and primarily because of this amendment as it come in. The previous bill before the amendment was a joint committee bill that we'd worked on. It died in conference committee a couple of years, and the good Senator Appropriations Chairman's correct. This amendment was brought in for an advocacy group, and it does pretty much gut the bill. So I'd ask you to defeat the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Hicks. We better get back to you, Senator Escobel, and then we'll let him pile on again.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, in regard to lowering that standard, that's in regard to the motion shall identify with specificity newly discovered material evidence other than newly discovered material evidence, which, if proven, would establish a reasonable probability the movement is actually innocent. That doesn't mean it would actually be innocent. There would still be a trial, but it would provide some basis for the individual to move forward. It wouldn't allow someone to, by simply saying, I didn't do it, to be entitled to a new trial. But if you're going to, the clear and convincing evidence is what would be used in the future trial to show whether the person was innocent or guilty. But this applies just to the evidence to move forward. Hope that explains it a little better.
Thank you, Senator Escobel. Senator Kinski. We're still on the amendment. Senator Roth was on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like a little more detail from the opponents of the amendment. When I hear gut the bill, that has a meaning to it, which means that the bill no longer does anything. That's how I interpret it. However, in this instance, that's not what this seems to do. So I'm actually confused. We had two people stand up and say it guts the bill. I'm not understanding that. I see a change in standard, which, if anything, it strengthens the bill. It might be strengthening it beyond what people want. So honestly, I realize it's late, but I would like to understand the objections to the amendment. So can I get more detail on why this amendment is bad, other than an illusion that the president seems to be enjoying about what it might look like to gut a bill.
Senator Burns, on the amendment, we're still on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, specifically on the amendment, if you look on page 2 of the amendment, down the bottom half, you see page 12 line, all the deletions on pages 12 and 13. That's the part of the amendment that actually basically ends up saying the state's going to pay this guy, but the state isn't going to get out of any of the liability. He can still sue. The beauty of this original bill is that it's similar to workman's comp. If the state has convicted you incorrectly and you're shown to be innocent, the state will sit there and pay you so much money, up to $500,000. But to get that, and to get it now,
you have to say, okay, I will not find you liable, I will not sue the state. Or don't sign it, and then wait years to go through court if you can find an attorney who will take it on a you know, on a contingency basis. That actually, to me, is a pretty, not a bad deal. You know, I hate these, anybody hates it if an innocent man or woman has been convicted of something. What this amendment does is it gets rid of the language about getting rid of the liability. It says the state will pay the guy, but the state's still liable. The guy can still turn around and sue the state. That's how it guts the bill.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Let's close in on the end of the discussion on the amendment. Senator Esquivel, do you want to address any of the concerns? I'm sorry, I don't have your microphone on. Let me get it. There you go.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, you know, the reason that was that section was deleted and to answer the arguments about gutting the bill is that, you know, if you waive your constitutional rights, well, it raises some additional issues for litigation. And we just wanted to comment getting the state embroiled in additional litigation over that particular provision.
Thank you, Senator Esquivel. Are we ready for the vote on the amendment? The question is on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 51. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. Back on the bill, there is a second Standing Committee Amendment. I yield to Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. The Senate File 51. Folks, this amendment appropriates $100,000 from the general fund to the Attorney General's office, and it will only be expended for the purposes of paying compensation. This amendment passed 3-2. I was a no, and I'll still be a no. But this is a placeholder to for some sort of money if you feel that this bill is meritorious. And it does limit, potentially, the amount that one can recover in this situation.
Thank you, Senator Ross. Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, Senator Rothfuss, and then we'll go to Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. From the discussion on this, I'm curious what happens in an instance where there is insufficient funds. I know that there was some discussion in the legislation about that, but I'm trying to run through a scenario where there's no funding in the account, but there's a theoretical obligation for the state to compensate for that. Would the state owe that money and then have to appropriate it later when those funds are available? Would that be something that would be paid out through other funds? Would it just be if we don't have the funds available, then that obligation is expected to be terminated? Can we have a little more analysis before we vote on this of the importance of having the funds at this time?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the one that brought this motion in appropriations, and the reason was twofold. One was, first of all, you need to understand that when you pass this bill, there's a fiscal impact. And so you can't just pass this bill and not recognize that you're putting the state on the hook for some liability. There's nothing magic about the number 1,000. Under the bill, as I understand it, on a brief reading in appropriations, was simply that it's you can have up to $500,000 and it's annuitized over, I think, at $50,000 a year until it's paid out. $100,000 is a placeholder would get you through 2 years and allow you to get to the legislative session so you can appropriate additional money. I'm not suggesting that this is the appropriate course of action. I'm just suggesting, and the reason for my motion was to make sure and clear to the body that passing this has a fiscal impact. There's going to be an obligation, and if you want to have at least the opportunity to have immunity from civil action in exchange for this compensation, then you need to have something behind it as opposed to, and we're still going to have to fix this in the bill despite the amendment, but you're going to give that in exchange or as a waiver for the other person's rights. But without the money, it would be meaningless, and I don't know how you could enforce the obligation if they chose to do it unless there's at least some form of compensation that can be awarded under the bill, which would be immediately, which is at least $50,000. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Perkins. The discussion is on Senate Standing Committee Amendment Number 2.
Further discussion on the amendment? Detecting none, the question is, should Senate Standing Committee number 2 pass? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Senate Standing Committee amendment number 2 has passed. We're back on the file. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, it's late. The hour is late. And the difficulty I've always had with this bill as it's come up is that the bill is intended and will only apply to a fairly narrow group. So if you look at the bill, it says that if you want to sue the state, if you want to execute your private action, this is not available to you. So for those that have watched these actions take place, is that if you are incarcerated and are truly an innocent person and your liberty was deprived, you bring what's called a 1983 action. It's a civil rights action. The reason you bring in a civil rights action is because there are no limitations to damages. You sue the state. The state pays if you win your civil rights action, that is, you're deprived of your liberty as a result of state action in an inappropriate way, then a claim, you take your claim, you win your case, and the judgments are paid out of our risk management pool, and we have insurance that at certain levels that if judgments exceed an amount within that we actually plan for, let's suppose it's $1 million, claims above that are paid by insurance. So the state has insurance policy to cover losses well above the potential claims, so that if those are there are lawyers that do this for a living, as if there are folks that actually look for those cases. They go out and chase for those cases, so that if you find yourself in the circumstances, it'd be pretty unusual if you really were a victim that you would not find somebody wanting to take the claim. And under those circumstances, $250, whatever these dollars are pretty small compared to what the value of a 1983 action is. So then the question is, who's going to exercise this case or these rights? Well, it's somebody who, you could have examples of somebody who says, well, I'm here in the end of my life, I don't want to prosecute a case. Maybe that's an explanation. So there could be some reasons why you wouldn't want to execute your claims. But by and large, we're saying, if you don't have a good claim, we're going to pay you. If you have a good claim, we know that you're going to go hire somebody and take your 1983 action and prosecute it. So as I see it, this is just a fund for those folks who don't have valid claims. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, on and against this bill, only for the reason on page 9, that 712-410 compensation. Mr. Chairman, I know of a case where the guy, 20-some years later, a few decades later, one of those sharp attorneys found out that maybe he could get out of the deal, found out that the state hadn't done a very good job or the entity hadn't done a very good job with the evidence. The guy, they couldn't prosecute him again. He called for another trial. They didn't go to trial. He was not innocent. He got out of it, and if we had this bill, he would be able to collect something other than having to go with the harder route to be able to prove that he was innocent. So for that reason, I'm against this bill.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Who else would like to speak on the bill? Any further discussion on the bill? Any further discussion? Detecting none. The question is on Senator Christensen's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 51. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion has failed. We'll have a standing division. All those in favor of the bill, please rise. Number 7, all those opposed, please rise.
The number was 22. The motion has failed.
Yeah.
We will now have a roll call vote.
Anderson?
No.
No. Barnard?
No.
No. Bebout?
No.
No. Boner?
No.
No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen? No. Co?
No.
No. Cooper?
No.
No. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
No.
No. Johnson?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? No. Pappas? No. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladen?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote? Landon, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 6 aye, 24 no.
By your vote, Senate File 51 has failed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 90.
Senate File 90, Lifetime Game and Fish Licenses, Purple Heart Recipients, an act relating to game and fish licenses, sponsored by Senator Cooper. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, which returned a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstetter, Emmerich, and Geis, Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass failed in accordance with Senate Rule 5-4. Ayes, Senators Burns and Hastert. Noes, Senators Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Senator Emmerich?
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise to report. Do so with a do pass on Senate File 90, Lifetime Game and Fish License, Purple Heart Recipients, and I'll turn that over to the good Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Senator Emmerich. Senator Cooper.
Chairman, fellow senators, I had the good fortune early in the Vietnam War era to serve in the U.S. military. One of the first assignments that I had was at a base in California. One of the unfortunate things that I had happen to me there, though, was to be able to work out on the flight line every day when the medevacs used to come in from Vietnam. These are the big planes that have the huge Red Cross on. Every one of those planes, day after day after day, I watched them come in. Some of those men came off there walking. Some came off on stretchers. Some of them had to be helped and limped. But many of them came off in metal boxes from the cargo bay. I can tell you, the only thing that recognized them for what they had given to their country was that little purple heart that was either pinned to their bandages or hung around their neck or was actually connected and pinned to those metal boxes on the top. That was all. That's all we gave them. And they gave much for this country. Many of them went home, recuperated, went home, and went on with their lives, never, ever being recognized in any other way for what they'd given for their country. It's important that we recognize these young men and women who gave to our country. It's very important.
That's what this bill does. That's what I've been trying to tell you. It isn't much. But remember, I have not told this story to very many people in my life. But I remember those little purple hearts on every one of those men. Crutches. Just remember that. I would appreciate your favorable vote on this bill.
Further discussion on Senate File 90. Senator Meyer.
The bill, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a story as touching as the one I just heard, Mr. Chairman, but I do know that my nephew brings the wounded warriors out to our farm to do hunting and shoot trap. And folks, you see these people on TV every night. They're the ones that come back. They're the ones that are protecting us from terrorism. And they are, Mr. Chairman. And this isn't a lot, but it's something we as a body and we as a state should seriously consider.
Further discussion on Senate File 90. Further discussion? Seeing no discussion, the question is on Senator Emmerich's motion. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 90. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 90 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Say that one more time. I wasn't hearing very well.
That clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Heard the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
The Honorable Police, sir, might have another.
Any reports?
We're going to suspend the rules and bring five more bills tomorrow.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that does clear the desk. Oh, wait a minute.
Wait.
Let's do it all over again tomorrow. Let's ask for the reading clerk to read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under considerations bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 85, do pass amended. Senate File 96, do pass amended. Senate File 60, do pass amended. Senate File 97, do pass. Senate File 18, do pass amended. Senate File 65, do pass amended. Senate File 102, do pass. Senate File 70, do pass amended. Senate File 58, do pass amended. Senate File 89, do pass. Senate File 39, do pass amended. Senate File 4, do pass. Senate File 12, do pass amended. Senate File 73, do pass amended. Senate File 91, do pass. Senate File 74, do pass. Senate File 53, do pass. Senate File 88, do pass amended. Senate File 24, do pass. Senate File 92, do pass. Senate File 100, do pass. Senate File 101, do pass. Senate File 62, do pass. Senate File 50, do pass amended. Senate File 52, do pass. Senate File 78, do pass. Senate File 86, do pass. Correction, Senate File 62, do pass amended. Senate File 95, do pass amended. Senate Joint Resolution 4, do pass. Senate Joint Resolution 1 failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 6, do pass. Senate File 82, do pass amended. Senate File 63, do pass. Senate File 99, do pass amended. Senate File 94, do pass amended. Senate File 72, do pass. Senate File 51, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate File 90, do pass.
Okay, Senate File 63
was do pass amended. Correction. Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. Any further? Nothing. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that does clear the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the Senate adjourn until 9 a.m. tomorrow, Friday.
Are there any announcements? Senator Von Flader.
Sorry, sir.
Senator Emmerich.
Mr. President, Joint Agriculture Committee number 5 will meet in the Jonah Room L54 at 8 a.m. tomorrow for the U.S. Forest Service and Wyoming State Forestry Division Forest Health Update.
Senator Case.
Just a double reminder, Mr. President, you have to be in at committee number 7 tomorrow at 8 a.m. Jonah Room S18 will take up Senate File 54, Appropriations to Local Governments Codification.
Any further announcements? There being none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion's been adopted. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow, Friday, February 19th.